Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
I think the shift really started, as you ladies know, from really neurodivergent and autistic adults, like telling us, right? Okay, this helped, this didn't help. This was traumatic for me. This was great, you know, and them giving us the feedback as adults, right? Later on, where we worked with them as littles. And so I love and appreciate that. And I always value their person-centered input.
Hi, Bravies. We are so happy to have you here. I am your host for this episode, Susanna Peace Lavelle, author, life coach, and advocate for disability families, joined, like always, by my co-host, Jessica Pate, brave mom and founder of the nonprofit We Are Brave Together. Today's episode, number 246, is an expert conversation on a topic that so many caregiving parents are navigating right now, the evolving landscape of therapy for neurodivergent youth. What has changed? What's expanded? And how families can approach therapy with clarity, compassion, and intention. Our guest today is Monica Fife, a licensed marriage and family therapist and board-certified behavior analyst. Monica brings a deeply thoughtful, strengths-based perspective to working with neurodivergent children, teens, young adults, emphasizing individualized care, dignity, and collaboration over a one-size-fits-all approach. In this conversation, we talk about the shift in ABA practices toward compassion and consent, the integration of different therapeutic models, including acceptance and commitment therapy, and why language matters so much in shaping how families understand diagnoses. Monica also shares why therapy should be a safe space for exploration, how focusing on strengths can lead to better outcomes, and why parents benefit from approaching therapy with goals rather than just a diagnosis. We also discuss social navigation, the growing range of resources available to families, and Monica's children's book series, which uses bibliotherapy to teach meaningful lessons in engaging and accessible ways. We absolutely believe that you are going to truly enjoy this episode because it offers both reassurance and practical insight, especially for parents trying to make thoughtful, informed decisions about therapy while honoring at the same time who their child already is. As always, a quick reminder to please rate and review this podcast, share episodes with your friends, follow us on social media, and check out our episodes posted weekly on our We Are Brave Together YouTube channel. And now, please enjoy our conversation with Monica Fife.
Hi, Monica. Welcome back to Brave Together podcast. I think this might be your third time on the show. I'm not sure. It's been a while, though, and it's so good to have you back.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jessica and Suzanne, for having me. Yes. I think this is maybe my second time, but I've always been a fan of We Are Brave Together from the beginning.
Today, we're going to have, I know in the past we've talked about social skills. Today, we're going to talk about your role as a therapist for neurodivergent teens. This is going to be a great conversation. I just appreciate your passion for this and your skills for this, because it's really, you know, when you get your master's in clinical psychology or marriage and family therapy or what have you, I don't know how many programs really shape you for working with the neurodivergent population. So I'm so appreciative.
I just feel so lucky because this is my first time with you, Monica, and I just love drinking in. I've been reviewing your bio and your work online, and I feel so blessed and selfishly like so excited because, you know, I'm raising a 19-year-old daughter who's on the autism spectrum, ADHD, and lots of fun things happening there. And I'm always seeking out just little like glimmers of, you know, resource, tool, support. I love it all. I'm going to soak it all up. So I'm so glad to be here.
Monica, why don't you tell everybody who's hearing you for the first time your background and expertise?
Sure. So thank you again for having me. My name is Monica Fife. I'm a licensed marriage family therapist. I'm also a BCBA, and I'm also a registered play therapist supervisor. And I live and practice and play here in Southern California.
Where exactly in Southern California, Monica?
Yes. Yeah, so my office, Play to Learn, is in Torrance, California. But, you know, I've been all over the South Bay. I grew up here as well. I practiced in Manhattan and Redondo as well. But right now our home is in Torrance, and we have a beautiful, we're so blessed to have a beautiful therapeutic office that's, we can talk in a little bit, but very neurodivergent friendly.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. I also love that you're a BCBA by background. And for anyone who's listening, you're not familiar with the acronym. It means that Monica also went to school and is certified or licensed as a behaviorist. So she has that also informing her therapeutic practices, which I think is really rich.
Thank you so much. And, you know, it's interesting. It's really shaped the trajectory of my career. And it's always been a foundation that I really think is a positive foundation that has helped me to serve my clients better. You know, I started off at UCLA as an undergrad under Dr. Lovas, rest in peace. And I learned so much in my early years. I thought I knew everything. I would go into parents' homes like, all right, I know how to solve this problem, you know, as a behaviorist. And then I thought, wow, I have a lot to learn, especially when I had kids of my own. You know, I really had to take a step back and zoom out to more of a strengths-based approach and a whole child approach while still keeping the important science that works in there. And then I expanded my view when I also was lucky enough to find play therapy in my master's clinical internships. That also really also broadened my way that I work now with kids, teens, and families. So that's been a blessing as well. And there's a lot of really good evidence-based promising research that blends a lot of these therapies with support of neurodivergent youth, which is very exciting.
You know, Ryan is now 22, mm-hmm. right? And my daughter, Arizona, is 19. And even 17 years ago when she was first diagnosed, it's a world of difference, which is fantastic, meaning that we're just sort of growing and flowing with the needs of the time. And I this is also what I love about being in Southern California too. I mean, I just feel like we are definitely at the forefront of, you know, really different types of therapies and play therapy. And like you said, like working with, you know, seeing the whole child and mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Yes. No, I totally agree. We really are so lucky and fortunate. And I remember early in my career when I was, you know, getting my marriage family therapy license, I used to get referred a lot of those cases. I've also worked in school districts, Wiseburn and Manhattan Beach School District. And I would always get the cases that were a little bit different, you know, like a little bit more than a typical like behavior academic need. Maybe there was some OCD going on or some self-harm or suicidality. There was divorce in the family, grief and loss. But like they would say, give those cases to Monica, you know, because I had the window, the capacity to say, okay, there's a lot of different things going on here. And we're going to, you know, not just zoom in because of autism or ADHD, but we're going to zoom in on what the need is, just like any other client who comes to therapy. So it's not about a cure. And Dr. Robert Jason Grant says it beautifully, you know, that just because you have autism or ADHD or OCD doesn't mean like you need therapy. And that also means for clinicians that when they come in the door, that's not like the only goal or only reason that they're there, because there's lots of folks who might never need or access therapy, and that's great for them. So it's only that they come in with a presenting issue and say, okay, I want to work on my self-esteem, or I need to work on my social navigation, or I need to work on my psychological flexibility. It's like, okay, now we have something that we're going to work on. We're not trying to cure like a diagnosis.
I love this so much. I actually had a former client texting me the other day, and she would be so okay with me just sharing the general, you know, issue. But
her daughter just got another diagnosis. And she was like, I'm really looking for a therapist for said diagnosis. And I was like, well, let's talk about it, right? It's just so much more than, I mean, we've got to go to the inside and discuss what the needs are, what are the behaviors, or what are the feelings, or how is this presenting actually right now in this moment, right? Because, you know, as our kiddos are getting older, I feel like there are so many different seasons and chapters and stages and shifts and, right, you feel like, oh, we've mastered this, you know, behavior, whatever it is, right? This unmet need.
Yes.
And now, hello, ding, 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 you know, there's something new. And it's
always,
I appreciate this approach.
Monica, how do you connect with your clients? Do you have something in particular that you do, something that you observe, something that, you know, you hear from parents, or you've read in a file, or all of the above? How do you connect?
That's a really wonderful question. And just like Susanna was saying, you know, I definitely want to make sure it's individualized, and I am doing my work to consult, read the history, you know, do the caregivers intakes. But then when I'm meeting the client, I'm really taking my time to follow their lead and enter their world. You know, my agenda's on the side. And what I'm actually in the first few sessions really looking for is something very important in the field right now that I'm really happy to have an opportunity to share, is the concept of consent versus assent. Assent is something that our kids and teens can do, right? Even our neurodivergent clients. And so right away, I'm bonding with them and I'm assessing, are they having social approach behaviors with me? Or are they wanting to run out the door? Are they initiating, manding for my attention, to play with me, to talk with me, to look at my toys? Or are they not wanting to be there? Parents and caregivers will consent, right? That's like the legal piece.
That's right.
But a good clinician, especially for anyone who has a challenge with expressing themselves with verbal communication, is always having to check assent. So I'm doing that day one and ongoing, because it can change over time, right? They can withdraw assent at any time. Right. And often I'll have parents or caregivers say, oh, no, they really need to be here. And I'm like, well, I'm not forcing anything, right? No coercion here. And I need to have respect and dignity for these clients. So that's my first piece that I come at with. And a lot of that, I wanted to share with the bravies out there, if you're doing your homework, what kind of therapist to pick, comes from a great article from Dr. Jonathan Tarbox, Courtney Tarbox, and Christine Rodriguez in 2023. They really, I thought, blew it out of the park with a wonderful article called Compassion-Focused ABA. And they really talk about, yeah, all those things, including assent, consent, dignity, and, not escalating a behavior just because you can, not embarrassing a client, like protecting their dignity always, using positive reinforcement and using non-contingent compassion freely, just giving it out freely, and much, much more. But it's a great article if you're looking at what kind of therapist should I pick for my child or teen. I would definitely say that's a starting point, is someone who is really, honoring those pieces from an ethical standpoint.
We are going to take a brief break. Stay with us.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, brave friends. You know, the shift in sort of old school Lovaas ABA and today's practice of ABA, because it seems like there's definitely a shift. And I love what you just called it. And maybe that is what it's called now. And certain practitioners are focused on that versus sort of old school traditional ABA. Can you explain how the shift came to be, and is it becoming widespread?
I think the shift really started, as you ladies know, from really neurodivergent and autistic adults, like telling us, right? Okay, this helped, this didn't help. This was traumatic for me. This was great, you know, and them giving us the feedback as adults, right? Later on, where we worked with them as littles. And so I love and appreciate that. And I always value their person-centered input. So I think that started to make a shift where I know the BACB updated their ethics code in like 2022 for behaviorists. And, you know, a good BCBAs out there, they were, you know, all doing good work, but they all really, I think, took a moment, a mindful moment to say, okay, just because we can put a behavior on extinction, right? Or just because we can do this, you know, it will produce a lovely graph. It can extinguish the behavior quickly, but is it honoring the client's dignity and respect? Is it honoring what the parents could implement when we're not there? And is it providing any stress to the family, to the child, to the teen? Because our first code of ethics in, you know, any kind of psychology, MFT, psychology, BCBA, is do no harm. And so I think that was a big piece that we all thought, okay, let's do a mindful check and think, what can we do better? Can the caregiver offer nurturance and support and a hug? And that's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be totally like neutral and cold. I really think there's been a really beautiful shift. And I see my colleagues like rising to that occasion and doing a great job. But I think if you're looking for counseling, if you're looking for, you know, ABA support, those are some things that I think a family would want to look for and talk to that provider. You know, like, how do you implement this? What's your approach? You know, what's your approach to, for example, the compassion focused ABA and different things like that. And also in counseling. But I think, of course, there's always more work to do. But I think that's with any profession. You always want to do better. Like Susanna said, when we know more over time and developmental stages, we do better.
Well, I would hope. I would hope for myself as a parent. I'm only speaking as a parent. I am not a professional in the capacity of, you know, being a therapist or, you know, being board certified as a behaviorist. I it's so interesting because along the journey, we've just come across so many different, who I always consider to be, you know, my daughter's name is Arizona. So I always say, well, this is our team Arizona right now. Right. And there's always like 12 different people. She has a one-to-one aide with her all day at school. And, you know, it's just, there's just so many different dynamics and energies and things that we have to take into consideration. I'm curious, Monica, what is the intersectionality that you find in your practice between being a LMFT and being a BCBA, and how does that work together and flow and inform how you work with, do you work with whole families? Do you work with just individuals, one-to-one groups? I would love to know.
For me, I, you know, tell families again from the beginning. Another thing is you want to ask your clinician when you're shopping around for that counselor, you know, what is your approach? Mine happens to be integrative. So I integrate what's called directive interventions and therapies with non-directive. For me, I love that balance, especially because our niche is neurodiversity, neurodivergent support. I do feel like that combo yields the best results for the client and the family. Now, of course, there's purist therapists out there, and that's a beautiful thing. So, you know, if you're shopping for someone and you want child-centered only, who's only going to follow the child's lead and do a beautiful therapy, that's okay. And if you want someone very highly directive, that's okay too. But I just think you want to be informed as a consumer, you know, what is your therapist doing and why? You know, what's the why with their choosing of their theoretical background, right? Yeah. And, you know, just to share again with the bravies out there, because I care so much about the parents, and I was so excited for this talk because I want them to be informed and to know for making these good, educated, informed decisions for their dear loved ones. You know, there is great research for child-centered play therapy. There was just a great article that came out in 2025 by Regine Chung and Dee Ray. And so, you know, so that yields some great benefits, right? But then there's also great therapy and research coming out on the more directive side. Like, for example, I love and practice a lot of acceptance and commitment therapy. And that has a trajectory of starting with ABA as the first wave, second wave CBT, third wave ACT, DBT, mindfulness, all these great therapies. And so again, that foundation's there. So to me, it makes sense with my background. You know, I think all these camps are doing their research, and I think it's up to the clinician to think, what's authentic to me? Because number one, you have to have the relationship and be present in the room with the client. So you're not just doing it because some evidence base tells you to do this. And so you're doing it and it makes sense to you. You can speak it, you can live it, you can breathe it, and you can tell the consumer, this is why I'm doing these theories. And do you agree with me or not? And let's talk about that.
Yes, that's right.
Because it's always their choice. Choice is like the big thing, right? Of course. And following ACT, of course, which I love, following and helping them identify their values.
Can you explain ACT a little bit more?
That is something I love to talk about. So ACT, I really love, and I really feel it goes so nicely with a lot of the goals I work on with neurodivergent youth, because the premise of it is helping them first get to know themselves and their values. Mm-hmm. And I always tell my kids and teens, you know, your mom and dad might value you having a clean room, and which is great, but what do you value? Yeah. They're like, oh, Mrs. Fife, like I value like going out on my BMX bike around the block alone. If my mom would just let me one time, right? And have that independence, like even for a moment, it's like, okay. And so we put it together, and this is where the play therapy piece comes in, and lots of fun, engaging ways, whether the child or teen is into art or play or puppets, you know, whatever it is, you get in there in a playful way that meets like their interest. So then we start with a values component, and then we talk about creating goals together. And the goals are, again, towards what's called psychological flexibility. A great example is masking. Again, from my perspective, there's lots of perspectives, but the way we talk about it with an ACT lens is, you know, there's many times where masking can be detrimental. When you're doing it too much, you can lose your sense of self. You can kind of get lost in who you are and get depressed, right? But if you have the insight to know, I'm choosing in this moment to mask because I have a job interview. Who's done that? I have.
Yeah, for sure. Right?
Yeah, or I'm going on a date, or there's a bully in my area and I need to blend in right now. I don't want to stand out. I'm going to become a target, right? So there are moments to do it. And so the beautiful thing is you can help clients to determine what they're leaning into. I'm choosing to do this and here's why. And this choice is bringing me closer to my values versus away from my values. Yeah. And so that's so powerful. And that's an ACT component that I love. And I just feel really, really resonates with a lot of my clients and helps them make these decisions.
What ages of individuals who are neurodivergent do you typically work with? Like what is your population, if you will?
For myself, I work with starting at 4 years old. So 4 to 25.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a pretty big range. Yeah. And I love it. And, you know, it's so fascinating because I started off my career with the littles, like most therapists do or behavior interventionists do. But then when I worked in the school systems, I worked in the middle schools and high schools, and I had to really get with, you know, being comfortable working with adolescents and young adults pretty quickly. And that's not that easy, right? It's different. But now I just adore it. I love it. So yeah, 4 to 25. And like you shared before, Susanna, that every stage that brings different developmental nuances. And I am a big proponent in, again, just because you have a diagnosis, let's say such as autism, doesn't mean you should be in therapy straight from 4 to 25, right?
Thank you for saying that.
Absolutely. My families know me and my team and know that we are often graduating kids out the door. And they're like, no, can we stay longer? And we're like, no, you got this. We need to see, you know, maintenance, generalization, please go into your community, try different things, right? You want things to settle. You want parents to try things on their own. And then the door is always open and you come back for all the phases of life. And, you know, honestly, I've been in the field 25 years and I've been so honored to have clients that I've started with. One young man comes to mind where I started with him at 8 years old and now he's in college.
Mm.
And now we Zoom at his university and it's like so cool.
Parents probably don't realize that there are people like you, Monica, out there to work with their neurodivergent kid because you hear about ABA or you hear about other things, but you don't necessarily hear about counseling and therapy outside of ABA therapy to work with kids who are neurodivergent or autistic. Are there a lot of you out there? Are there a lot of you out there across the United States, across the world, who have really dialed in into working with this population, because it is a different therapeutic approach. It is a different group to work with than certain places on the spectrum or just neurotypical kids who are battling anxiety, right? It's very different than working with an otherwise neurotypical child with anxiety.
Yes, yes, and yes. Absolutely. And I do think there are these wonderful folks out there, but we need more for sure. And I think honestly, a positive piece of this movement is that families can look towards counseling and, you know, traditional kind of psychotherapy services more than they used to, right? I think in the past, you're right, it was more ABA, it was speech, OT, PT. And now it's like, okay, what can play therapists do? What can a traditional therapist do? Executive functioning coaches do? Like, there's so much more that people have expanded to help all the needs when that client is ready and wants to work on them. I really like also Dr. Robert Jason Grant from Springfield, Missouri, developed a therapy called OtPlay, and he's expanding play therapy, you know, to be accessible for families and kids and teens that are neurodivergent. And I would definitely reference him and some of his folks that he's trained because they know how to adapt interventions to neurodivergent like youth and teens. And so he does some really good work. There's lots of people that are doing great work that are understanding how we can better counseling so it's accessible for clients that are neurodivergent and in need. I can share that one of my favorite things that I've learned from him is the language that we use. When families come to see us, you know, you ask what ages I work with, starting at age 4, right? We're already helping them create their story. And we're a big part of that story from the moment they enter our waiting room. And I love that he shares, okay, instead of saying something like, you know, I think your child is at risk for autism, instead say something like, there's a high probability of autism.
Yeah, seriously.
You know? Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for that. Yes.
Because that word at risk, it's like, oh, this is something scary I should be scared of, or how do we fix this, right?
Yes.
So it starts with our language of helping from the beginning, whether, you know, doctors, therapists. Also, instead of saying deficits, try weaknesses. Instead of saying, oh, they have comorbid ADHD. I mean, comorbid, what a yucky word, right?
You why can is say, morbid in there? I mean, why did whoever invented the comorbidity and comorbid?
Right. Yeah. Terrible language. And so you can say co-occurring. Like, all right.
Co-occurring.
Language is so powerful.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yep. Yep. And again, we're not looking for a cure or recovery. We're looking to increase adaptive skills, increase their vitality in life, increase their choices in life, help their social navigation. You know, it's a lot of it is language, because we're not just for us, but we're helping develop this story for the parents that we care so much about and the caregivers, as well as the clients.
Stay with us, Bravies. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Brave Together podcast.
I'm curious, do you have like, and if not, can you please create it? Like a guidebook or a handbook that we as parents of children, neurodivergent children can like give out to our family members who, by the way, mean so well and have been on or, and friends, right? Who have been on this journey with us now for 19 years, because even before Arizona was diagnosed at age 2.5, there were so many questions, right? I just want to write an entire new dictionary of like words and phrases, right? Previously, currently, right? And that could be ever changing and ever becoming, because as we, you know, grow and evolve and transform. And I love this conversation so much, because I do it so much in my daily practice. You know, people are like, well, what's wrong with her? You know, even now, like when we meet people, right? And I was like, well, there's nothing wrong with her. Do you have something like that? Or
yes, I mean, I agree. I offer those things in trainings that I provide for clinicians, but I think you're right on that. We should develop something to give to parents and caregivers and consumers. That's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to, I'm so excited to be here and wanted to do this talk with you all, is I want parents and bravies out there to have information, to be educated, and to make these great decisions. You know, to know that there is a lot of good things out there. They just have to know what to ask for and how to get it.
And not in a way of like toxic positivity, glossing over yes. hard. That's not right. what we're saying. Right. But can we change our language so it's not so doom and gloom and scary and bad and wrong and terrible? Really, if we shifted all that, when parents would get a diagnosis, it wouldn't be quite so devastating. Because of the way the culture and society talk about autism or other diagnoses and disabilities, it's like somebody kicks us in the stomach, you know. But I just really think if we had not just even different language, but certainly a different attitude, and we, you know, valued all our children and teens and adults with disabilities more so, then again, it wouldn't be such a gut punch when a diagnosis is delivered.
For therapists and psychologists, you know, we're already doing a lot of this work when we meet the client, because often the client comes in because of a problem, right? Otherwise, why would you go to therapy, right? If there's nothing to work on. So usually they're referred from the school, or the parents or caregivers are bringing them in. There's a problem to fix. Part of our work is to shine a light on the strengths of that person to their family, to the client themselves, and not only see the problem. And reminding the parent, remember, you know, what your child's like, laugh at this funny, silly thing. Don't you, you know, what do you love the way they laugh and giggle? Or do you remember when they do this, or they, you know, they're kind to their sibling, or whatever it is, and helping the parent remember, like, oh yeah, you know, they're not always aggressive or frustrating or annoying, you know, like they are also very kind and special too. And so it's like reminding them of that, because everyone wants to see the problem. And that's not a way to work, to address needs, and definitely not a way to protect the client's self-esteem.
I think they feel so deep. Everyone feels so deeply, right? You know, what would you say to someone? What would you say to a parent, a mom, a dad, a family member, when their child, they first get that first diagnosis for their child? What would your response be?
Well, I definitely would try to use the language that we talked about today, being really mindful of my words and what story I'm presenting from the beginning, right? Because that's shaping it right there for their response of how they're going to take it in. I would definitely chunk the information, you know, do a little at a time, make sure that I'm answering their questions, make sure I'm connecting them to resources, and really validating that they're not alone in this, and that there is support and help, and we're here to help whenever they choose to access help or not. Again, it's their choice. It's not that they have to run out the door and get every therapy under the sun, right? And engage in a huge, intensive, stressful day, but it's like, you know, one thing at a time, we got this.
I love that. One thing at a time.
What do you love the most educating parents on how best to support their neurodivergent kid in the wild or at home?
I think for sure, you know, again, like we mentioned, seeing them for their strengths. We don't want to squash who they are. Mm-hmm. I just had a family recently say to me, well, we need to correct this behavior of my child, like blurting out in class and always thinking they're the teacher and always wanting to, you know, be first and get their answer right. I'm like, well, do we? You know, are we sure about that? Because, you know, this is a leadership quality. This is assertiveness, right? That could be a beautiful thing in life. Right now in elementary school, it's rough, but in college, that's a professor's dream. And so it's like, okay, we don't want to. So I always give advice of, we're not trying to change who they are. We're not trying to extinguish these behaviors. We're trying to help them be flexible, help them think of others. You know, I love that you know this information, honey, and you want to show that you know, but you know, look around. Are you kind of like taking the opportunities away from your friends? Like no one else gets to share? It's just, again, that flexibility, increasing social awareness and perspective, getting kids and teens out there socially, I think in this environment is big. There's so much isolation right now. It's so easy to just do everything online. And I know it takes a lot of effort and work to find those hangouts and get-togethers, to find those friends with common interests and those play dates, but that's never going to change. Like, we need that probably now more than ever. So I'm always pushing my parents to find those resources, to find those social get-togethers. We are, you know, meeting in Southern California, where we do have a lot of resources. And I know that doesn't mean that every area does. I'm very aware of that. But I do think there's a lot more than there used to be. I think the regional centers are doing a great job, our local one, of helping families connect to it and get funding for it, which is huge. That definitely was not there when I started. One of my missions became creating really good, high-quality, evidence-based and fun social skills, social navigation groups for kids and teens and young adults, was because there wasn't any out there.
Monica, is there anything that you haven't talked about that you want to make sure that you get to share and educate us and our audience on?
If you're looking for littles, for therapies for littles, I would definitely recommend Jasper, if you haven't heard of that. That's another great evidence-based, play-based treatment developed right here at UCLA with Dr. Connie Kasari and Dr. Amanda Golsrud. It's a really nice NDBI, which is a blend that's a little more naturalistic than traditional ABA. Okay. So it's something to look into. I would also look into, in terms of counseling with young kids ages 4 to 8 and their caregivers, if there's been some ruptures in their attachment or stress, a wonderful evidence-based treatment called TheraPlay. TheraPlay is wonderful for parent and child, caregiver and child, grandparent and child. We know there's so many wonderful caregivers out there, and it's a really good way to work on engagement, nurturing structure and bonding in a playful way, and has really good research with the autistic population. So I wanted to mention that. If you're looking for more traditional CBT for your child or teen that's autistic or neurodivergent, Dr. James Wood from UCLA does a great program on CBT with autism. So you can look into that, which might be helpful for things like depression or anxiety. There's also a lot of great research coming out about movement and exercise. That's kind of game changing. They're really kind of finding, yeah, that especially early on, that it's very, very imperative to help with that, you know, cross-brain learning, bilateral learning, movement and exercise. There's some really cool studies coming out on that. And then whenever, again, you're looking for counseling, again, don't come in with the diagnosis, come in with the goal or thing you want to work on, because that will lead to, okay, my child is having trauma or OCD or grief and loss. So I'm going to find a therapist who knows about OCD. So they should be trained in exposure response prevention, right? Don't throw that out just because someone says, oh, I work with neurodivergent population. You still need like the strong therapy like any child or teen deserves. So make sure you're finding what you can deliver best to your kid or kiddo or teen coming from that perspective of theory, DBT, EMDR, there's so much, right? Play therapy. And then, again, as one of my great mentors shares, Dr. Robert Jason Grant, he has a great 5-step filtering process that I love. So you come in with your pre-contemplation of discovery. You're then evaluating for theory and goals. Now you are looking at step number three, presentation. How am I going to make this engaging to the child or teen? Is this going to be Minecraft? Is this going to be STEM-based? Is this going to be music and movement? Like, how am I going to make this engaging? That's a big piece. So you need a therapist who's going to be playful and fun and creative and, you know, who's going to go there wherever, you know, your kid or teen wants to go. You're going to make sure step number four is that you adjust it to be neurodiverse affirming, such as the things we talked about today, right? Yeah. So make sure it's affirming, it's valuing, it has the right language, it's a strength-based approach. What do we need to change or modify? How's the environment? Is it sensory friendly when you're going to therapy? Is it ADA accessible? Are you having to trek up to like the third floor with kids and a stroller, right? It's like, is the waiting room filled with like scents and too many people? It's like, or is it just chill? You want to make sure you have a therapist who's open to like movement breaks, sensory breaks, teaching coping skills. You know, we have all kinds of fun stuff like little choice baskets and fidget baskets and trampolines and whatever the kid or teen needs. Of course, snacks is always great, nurturing them that way, making sure they are feeling nurtured and loved. And then you're ready to implement step number five of this wonderful five-step filtering process. You're ready to go and you change as you go. You're always checking for a scent and you're always giving out lots of doses of free compassion throughout, never trying to change who they are.
Oh my gosh. I love you, Monica. This is so good. This is so important for every parent to hear these words, even if you're not seeking a therapist.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And then if I could take one last moment to share my own last little creative passion that I have going.
Of course.
So one of the things that I honor in myself is some self-care and creative expression, right? I'm mom of two teens, you know, working hard and teaching. And I think, okay, what can I do for myself as an extension of self-care, but also to help others? And as we talked about earlier, right, that could be so many things for so many people, whether it's going for a walk with a friend, taking someone out for a coffee that needs help, you know, donating things, playing music for others, volunteering. For me, as a kid, I always loved creative writing. I thought to myself, you know, I love writing. It brings me so much joy. And one of the ways that you can help families across the world, right, is something called bibliotherapy. So bibliotherapy is really great. It's just using books and novels and characters and themes to extend a coping lesson, a therapeutic lesson, but in a fun, safe way, because it's given in a character, right? It's externalized.
Yeah.
Yep. And there's so many great ways to use books out there and bibliotherapy. And for myself, I wrote a series of children's books called Welcome to Petsville. Yes. And it's so fun, where every book in the series starts with a little community of pets, because who doesn't love animals? And you're finding like, whose house are you at in each story? And in every story, the pets have the answers, not the family. And they help the kids solve the problems.
Not the mom. God forbid the mom comes up with the answer. That's so good, Monica. Oh my God.
Myself included. And so like, you know, there's fun little like stories about, this one's about sibling shenanigans, you know, for all the siblings that I've loved and worked with over the years have inspired me. Also working with Sib Shops and the great Don Meyer. Then this is a great little book on stress and handling stress. And it's called Tumbling Towers. And there's a beautiful German Shepherd in here that helps his little boy deal with stress. And this little German Shepherd is actually named Puppy after my dog growing up. And he really helps, you know, him solve, how do I handle stress in my life? And all the books come with an act lens and perspective, because again, that's me. Also from, you know, neurodiverse and strength affirming perspective, although I don't name it, just so that it can be accessible to anyone, right? Because no kid wants to feel like they're reading it for therapy.
That's right.
Yes, yeah. It's like enough therapy, right? And then my last newest book is called Lizzie's New School of Fish. Mm-hmm. And this one is really fun. And you can tell from the title, but they're having a parallel process where Lizzie is learning how to make friends in her school of fish and parallel teaching Jessie how to do the same at her new school. And so it's a social navigation book for not just for a new school, but any new kind of social navigation, how to make a new friend. And this one actually was inspired to me from the Peers curriculum from Dr. Liz Loggison, but in a child-friendly way. And then last but not least, every book, because again, I feel like I really wrote this in mind with parents, educators, counselors, and clinicians to benefit as well when you're reading it, tired at night. It's like, I'm going to benefit from this book as well as my sweetheart next to me. And so in every book, there's like caregiver tips as well.
Ooh, I just got chilled. I love that.
Thank you. So I hope they help. It's my way, again, of extending the help out there, you know, lending help, as we like to say in the books, lending a fin or paw, but lending help out there in fun ways that can reach everybody, just like your amazing podcast, which I just want to say, as a clinician, I'm so grateful for that I can always refer families in need and I can point to you need We Are Brave Together.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Monica. Well, this has been such a joy, such a great education. I'm so excited for our audience. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio.
Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in-person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. And we have published our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight. It will encourage and validate every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcasts, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.